The Center for Public Justice has announced prizes for research on social policies that affect vulnerable children, families, and communities. And one of the winning teams is from Wheaton College. This weekend, we meet them and talk about their findings and recommendations. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. The Center for Public Justice is a nonpartisan Christian think tank that advances principles and policies for a pluralistic society, diverse populations. The center's website says that the organization was founded in 1977 by community groups committed to advancing an integrated biblical view of political service and responsible government. They run the Hatfield Prize Awards, and we're going to talk with a couple of local awardees. Addison Rehm is a junior at Wheaton College, majoring in biblical and theological studies with a minor in social work. Her faculty guide through this endeavor was Keith Johnson, a professor of theology and chair of the Undergraduate Biblical and Theological Studies Department at Wheaton College. And thanks to both of you for joining me. When we think about it, it's not surprising that people studying theology would have an interest in helping and serving people in need, but I'm not sure we automatically think of focusing on government programs designed to do that. So, Professor Johnson, how does the Center for Public Justice figure into this picture?
Well, we at Wheaton have long had a relationship with CPJ as far as a shared interest in the health of the church, in the health of Christian engagement with society and the government. At Wheaton College, we have a motto that we are to benefit society in our work, that our graduates go off and engage the world in positive ways. And that's the same kind of mission that the Center for Public Justice is about responsibility, about stewarding our democracy and our gifts that we have been given to engage in the political sphere. So there's a lot of overlap in our missions. And we have a lot of relationships between the organization. A lot of our students end up there as interns or as employees. So we're really excited whenever we get a chance to partner.
Well, Addison Rehm, let's first focus, before we talk about your work, let's focus on you a little bit. What has drawn you to the field of social work? Why this?
Yeah, totally. So studying biblical and theological studies and social work, it's not always apparent to individuals why I do those two things together and why I have an interest with them. But it actually goes back to a class I had with Dr. Johnson 2 years ago when I was a sophomore. It really got me thinking of, how am I supposed to think about these large kind of worldly issues from the perspective of my faith and being a Christian? And I always was interested in child and family welfare. Growing up in rural Indiana, a lot of my friends and their families were supported by food stamps or SNAP benefits. And so it was always kind of a world that I was aware of. And so decided to add a social work minor to my degree to be involved and to gain the educational perspective of the field of social work, to kind of get the quote unquote insider perspective into that world and into that work. So yeah, that's kind of led me to where I am now.
Yeah, your bio says that you want to pursue justice in social policy, especially in child and family welfare. What does that kind of justice look like to you, especially having grown up being able to see it? So many of us don't, and don't get that perspective.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll graduate from Wheaton in May with my bachelor's degree, and I'm looking to graduate school, specifically focusing on public policy. So I would love to use that educational experience to understand the world and work of policy in a more narrowed view, to then hopefully go on and utilize means such as research, writing, advocacy work, to formalize the work of public policy in the world. So I kind of explained it as government adjacent. So you could be working in a specific think tank or a nonprofit, kind of in its own view, in its own lane per se, and working in research to advance policy advocacy within that specific field.
Professor Johnson, let's talk about the project. We understand. I can understand why the SNAP program was selected because of Addison's experience. But how do you even conceptualize a project, a study of that?
Yeah, well, it was the way we ended up as partners is that Addison approached me. We had taken a class together in Christian ethics that she referenced, and a lot of the themes that we talked about in class ended up in, through her eyes, given her interests, she saw points of connection that I wouldn't have known about otherwise. And so she was really the one who invited me into the topic, or at least into the connections that I would not have been aware of, particularly the idea of responsibility, that as a Christian, we had read Dietrich Bonhoeffer's Ethics together, and his ethics is built around the concept of responsibility, that you have commitments to the concrete people around you. And so as Addison was talking about her own story, she realized in her own community that there are needs that exist that often are behind the scenes, or maybe not up in the center of your view unless you're paying attention. Well, a Christian who is faithful, who is thinking ethically, at least in Bonhoeffer's view, should have a concrete view of the people around them and be responsible for them, take responsibility, and then act in ways that serve. And so when she introduced the idea of applying for this prize and also this research study, I was really interested because it looked like a real world contemporary application of some of the concepts that we had developed in class.
Indeed. And for I should point out for people who may be listening that don't realize this, that the SNAP program is what, for those of us who are old enough, would remember as food stamps once upon a time. People don't get that reference anymore, but I'm old, so I guess so. Addison, let me ask you, because obviously this was your idea. Talk to me a little bit about what the SNAP program does. I mean, it supports more than 41 million Americans each month, but what it does and how it works, or maybe how in some ways you can see that it doesn't work.
Yeah, totally. So I guess I'll just kind of begin with a family applies and goes through the process and then receives their benefits. It's an incredibly lengthy application process. It's over a dozen pages of government paperwork. And if you've ever filled out government paperwork, nobody likes to do it. For some individuals, they lack the time or the resource or the understanding of what are all of these documents? How do I fill them out? And so to begin, there's actually a really big gap of individuals who probably should be receiving these benefits, but aren't, either because of, mainly because of a lack of the application. But if a family or an individual goes through the application and is accepted, then they receive benefits based off of their family's size. So it could range anywhere. I think for a one person, it's about $200, $250 a month. And then it can go up from there, dependent on how many people you have living in your household. After that, benefits are now given. They were originally with stamps back in the much before my day, but are now transferred using EBT or electronic benefit transfer, which is essentially like a debit card, but is specifically only for SNAP benefits. There's specific kind of buckets or amounts that families are given every single month for X percentage of your benefits is towards this category X of food, and then X percentage is towards this XYZ. So it's not just like, hey, we are giving you $300. You can do whatever you want for it. There are some guardrails there. Ways in which I've seen this program not work as efficiently or effectively as possible, and I talk about this in towards the end of the report, is the way that poverty is identified here is incredibly outdated and doesn't work very well in actually calculating the benefits that families need. There's things like cost of living, housing, and food based on where you're living in the country that vary person to person, place to place. Specifically, I was researching Chicago, which obviously has a much, much higher cost of living than back home where I'm from in Indiana. And while there is cost of living adjustments made, it's minimal, not sufficient. And ultimately, there just needs to be a revision and an updating to the way that poverty is calculated here in America to then provide better benefits to families.
And to either of you, Is the stigma of needing such aid still a factor in people reaching out for the help, or maybe getting the help, getting the kind of sympathy or attention that they need from people in the in government?
I would definitely say that it is through a conversation that I had with my social work professor here at Wheaton. She actually is a practicing social worker. She worked in Cook County. She's now out here in DuPage. But a lot of her job is helping people go through the process of applying to SNAP programs. Specifically, the individuals she works with are teen moms who are single. So these are anybody between the youngest she has is 15, the oldest she has is 23. So in my age range. And a lot of what she does is helping them go through the process of, hey, here are the benefits that you're actually eligible for. A lot of times people just don't know. And she said a lot of times her clients, the moms, actually think, oh, there's people probably in much worse positions than me. I don't need these. It's okay. And a lot of her job is actually making them realize, no, these are designed for you. And how can I help you do the things that you need to do to receive these benefits? So a lot of her job is actually helping people fill out the very tedious government paperwork.
I can imagine. Professor Johnson, we should make the distinction because I think we generally, or at least we reporters, and that's one of our problems, is just think of this as we're talking about hunger. Food insecurity and hunger aren't the same thing. Can you help us make that distinction?
Sure. Someone can be food insecure for lots of reasons. So food insecurity is a broader category that accounts for a lot more of the concrete realities that you'll actually see. So when we think of someone who's hungry, well, they don't have a meal right now. But food insecurity involves lack of access to food. They may not have a grocery store in their neighborhood that they can access easily. It may be access to the right kind of food. So you could be insecure in the sense that you have access to some stores, but they don't have the kind of products that could lead to a healthy diet, to a healthy life. And it can also mean you have the ability to obtain food, but it's you're not aware of all the resources, or there's unique challenges, or it's just a larger part of your budget than it really should be. So it accounts for a lot of the tensions and realities that families in particular face when it comes to securing food. And it's a wider category that helps us understand, or at least begin to think about the realities on the ground a little more concretely than the idea of being hungry did.
How well does it appear that the current structure of the SNAP program addresses those kinds of needs, the kind of varied needs that could be presented?
I think one of the things that Addison discovered again and again, and as a theologian, I found this really interesting, and as an ethicist, is that that there are a lot of gaps, and the gaps are, in some sense, due to a lack of specificity and attention. When you have a program, a governmental program, and you have a bureaucracy built around it, those are necessary things, but they almost always generalize. They think in terms of huge amounts of funding. They think in terms of policies that apply in every situation. And reality is always more complex. And so you need advocates in the trenches of the bureaucracy to help this general program apply to specific situations. And that's been a point of disconnect. The programs are having a hard time actually addressing some of the concrete needs on the ground as they're lived, partly because it's designed for a large kind of general idea of hunger or of supplying resources, but not the actual lived dynamics that are constantly changing on the ground.
And I want to talk a little bit more about how things are run, but let's first remind our listeners that you're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Dellamore, and we're talking about maybe rethinking government help for those in need. We're talking with participants in the Center for Public Justice's Hatfield Prize Program. Wheaton College junior Addison Rehm and Professor Keith Johnson have looked into the so-called SNAP program dealing with food insecurity across the U.S. And that is a program that comes, sometimes we forget this, under the omnibus farm bill. And that means it's a product of Congress. And therein lies some of the problems. Am I correct, Addison? Congress tinkers with things, and then they design these programs. What are the problems that you found within that structure?
Yeah, I will start by saying I am by no means well-versed in political science. I studied theology, and so I'll try to stay in my lane to the best that I can. However, I think through my research and talking with actual participants in SNAP or people who work in nonprofits related to food insecurity, the thing that every single person said, independent of each other, was there's just a complete and total disconnect between individuals who are sitting in the seats or the positions of power to make these decisions and the actual realities of the people who benefit from these decisions. There's multiple factors that can go into this. One of the big ones is re-election. Everybody wants to be re-elected, and re-election also means you need to go with the people who will vote for you. And that can be a huge factor in the way that people will swing in these matters. I think it's incredibly interesting that, I mean, this is presently happening. The Farm Bill is being revised. It was extended, the 2018 Farm Bill was extended to be active until the end of the month, which is quickly approaching. And so this is an active issue that's unraveling as we speak.
And that's a good point. In fact, I was reading your report, I was thinking, you know, this isn't a report. You're actually doing reporting like hard news reporting. You're doing my job, and it's a good thing because we might not have looked at this. I'm glad we are. But you also point out, and both of you can talk on this. Sometimes the kinds of the program decisions that are being made with political motivations that. You know, there's a goal in mind, people's own impressions of what ought to happen. For example, we're spending too much money on this program, which may or may not be the case. How do you see that? And especially from your perspective of what you feel should be done and what people should be doing for each other. And Professor?
Yeah. On one level, that dynamic you're describing of politicians and government leaders sometimes making decisions on the basis of criteria that are other than what's on the ground. So they're thinking in terms of funding across government. They have political interests. They have donors who are influencing in some way some of their decision-making. They have a party that they're aligned with. All of these things affect the choices someone might make when it comes to a bill like the Farm Bill, and that downstream affects people on the ground. That's kind of the nature of politics. I mean, that's the way things work, at least right now. And I'm not sure that most people, and we're thinking, you know, we wrote this with the idea of addressing both the Christian and non-Christian audience, but people who care about engaging real lives and feel a calling toward that. What can we do? I think it argues for advocacy. So the system, I think that's a bigger question, and it's going to do what it's going to do and sometimes often disappoint us. And yet we have to be in the trenches of trying to be the point of connection between that big level government program and the actual lives on the ground through our advocacy, through our education, through communication. And I think Addison's a good model for that with this project, trying to help people see the disconnect and advocating for people who often are voiceless. That's something you can do on a daily basis. The Center for Public Justice does that kind of work. We are trying to do that kind of work in this project, to be that change agent from in between.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Addison, did the advocacy developed from not necessarily this project, but from your connection, or did you get into it as an advocate?
I would definitely say it developed kind of the whole way I ended up in this position and with this opportunity was I studied theology, but was feeling this pull towards being interested and involved in public policy. And I had no clue what to do. I had no practical experience. And literally through a Google search, found the Hatfield Prize and saw this as kind of my way of like, all right, this is a way that I can kind of figure out, like, is this something I'm interested in? Is this something that I want to be involved in? And so, yeah, I would definitely say it was a process that was while I was in the project. So, yeah.
And you touched on it before in my last question to you, but what concerns you about what's happening with the farm bill now? Because I know you report on some of what's going on right now, and a worry about it.
Yeah. I think there's two main things that come to mind. It's incredibly troublesome, especially when you think food is kind of the primary foundation of the flourishing of a family, that and housing, a roof over people's heads. But I would say the first is just literal dollars. As we all know, groceries cost way more than they used to, even a year ago, even 6 months ago. And this would be the largest cut to SNAP funding in about 30 years, which is incredibly concerning, just the sheer amount of money that would be lost to the program. I think the second is a misunderstanding or a misrepresentation of individuals on SNAP, but also the program itself. I think there's kind of this stigma. We were talking about stigma earlier, that individuals on SNAP, they're either lazy, they don't know how to gain access to nutritious foods by themselves, and they make poor choices when it comes to the food that they have. There was a quote that I included that sugary drinks are actually the second most bought item with SNAP benefits, which, while that is true, it's a little bit misleading because of the price of those drinks. But to equate that then to the health status of Americans as a whole just isn't really an equal comparison to make. So I think, again, to reiterate the two things, the sheer cut in funding that there would be, but also a misunderstanding of the lives, the actual families who benefit from SNAP, and the program itself are probably the two most concerning factors to me.
Now, talk to me about the things that could make the SNAP program. If you had a magic wand or, control of Congress, what could make the program or the way we address food insecurity, to put a wider spin on it, better?
Yeah, I think to go back to what I was saying before, just reassessing the way that poverty is evaluated here in the United States would change SNAP funding. That level would most likely rise, which would then rise the levels of benefits that families were able to receive. That would just better reflect the realities of families that they actually their actual needs and the needs of their children today. So that would be the thing that I think I would advocate most for. And that is not only my personal opinion throughout this process, but was also the thing that was brought reiterated to me through individuals actually in this today, through people at GCFD, the Greater Chicago Food Depository, and Chicago DCFS. Both groups kind of in this work were that was the thing they advocated for.
And Keith Johnson, you have some ideas on what you'd like to see more of or less of?
Well, I think tend to think at a more theoretical level. And so what I appreciate about what Addison did is that she and her project went and talked to both recipients, to those who are working directly with those who need SNAP funding, who are able, helping them apply for the programs. And she was able to get a on the ground realistic picture of what's actually happening. And so what I would really like to see at a broad level is a change in the way we think about things like the SNAP program and like the Farm Bill, that we somehow and in creative ways work towards, as we are implementing a bill and implementing and crafting it over a long time and in the processes of Congress, that we are actually able to connect on the ground with who is affected by what we're doing and have that speak into the process more directly. So to me, that speaks for the need of politically engaged citizens who are knowledgeable, who are seeking out of their commitments, seeking out reality, and then communicating that back. beyond a policy level, I would like to see individual change. I think as Americans, we have an obligation to be hardworking citizens who are committed to one another and to this project. And so we, this project we call America. And so we have to be engaged on a in beyond our own individual lives and get out and start to advocate and draw some of these connections ourselves.
I hear you on that. It's especially in these political seasons that we get, especially every 4 years, some politicians say, who've been asked about this, and we've heard this quote this, this year. What happens with all of these people that need help? And they say, well, some social service agencies and the churches are going to just have to do more, to which, the churches and social services agencies look around at how their donations have been lagging and go, "You're kidding, right?" But that's the reality, is that we're expecting the agencies that are trying to help to just help more, and that's got to weigh on people. I mean, how much can even the faith community do? I mean, is it frustrating?
Yeah, I think there's a frustration bifurcation there of as if the government is not for and about the lives of the people. That we do our thing, but you on the ground, you all will take care of that, as if there's a difference in mission there. We are at a governmental level and the level of policy and the level of our bureaucracies and our programs, we are a part of a same network, a community. And yes, there are social service agencies and churches who need to be engaged and always want to do more, but our government has a responsibility also because it is us.
Addison Rehm, how has this project, if at all, changed your view of what you want to do in the future?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as a senior, that's kind of the question that I think about this entire year is what's next? What am I going to do? And I think this project and this process has really solidified the things that I know and the things that I don't know, which the things that I don't know are most definitely greater. So I think it has solidified my decision to want to pursue graduate studies. So I'm currently in the process of applying to a master's of public policy. But it's also solidified my interest in integrating both my faith with the work of policy. And so seeking out any opportunities in any ways, whether that be in academia, but also just in my involvement politically in my church, to live out the mission and the vision that I believe my faith calls me to. So, we'll see what happens.
No, I think we're going to see a lot of good things. I would like to thank Addison Rehm and Professor Keith Johnson from Wheaton College and the Center for Public Justice for spending this half hour with us. To our listeners, if you would like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That's WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on the homepage, and you can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Dellamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM. The Center for Public Justice has announced prizes for research on social policies that affect vulnerable children, families, and communities. And one of the winning teams is from Wheaton College. This weekend, we meet them and talk about their findings and recommendations. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Dellamore, and this is At Issue. The Center for Public Justice is a nonpartisan Christian think tank that advances principles and policies for a pluralistic society, diverse populations. The center's website says that the organization was founded in 1977 by community groups committed to advancing an integrated biblical view of political service and responsible government. They run the Hatfield Prize Awards, and we're going to talk with a couple of local awardees. Addison Rehm is a junior at Wheaton College, majoring in biblical and theological studies. Studies with a minor in social work. Her faculty guide through this endeavor was Keith Johnson, a professor of theology and chair of the Undergraduate Biblical and Theological Studies Department at Wheaton College. And thanks to both of you for joining me. When we think about it, it's not surprising that people studying theology would have an interest in helping and serving people in need, but I'm not sure we automatically think of focusing on government programs designed to do that. So, Professor Johnson, how does the Center for Public Justice figure into this picture?
Well, we at Wheaton have long had a relationship with CPJ as far as a shared interest in the health of the church, in the health of Christian engagement with society and the government. At Wheaton College, we have a motto that we are to benefit society in our work, that our graduates go off and engage the world in positive ways. And that's the same kind of mission that the Center for Public Justice is about responsibility, about stewarding our democracy and our gifts that we have been given to engage in the political sphere. So there's a lot of overlap in our missions. And we have a lot of relationships between the organization. A lot of our students end up there as interns or as employees. So we're really excited whenever we get a chance to partner.
Well, Addison Rehm, let's first focus, before we talk about your work, let's focus on you a little bit. What has drawn you to the field of social work? Why this?
Yeah, totally. So studying biblical and theological studies and social work, it's not always apparent to individuals why I do those two things together and why I have an interest with them. But it actually goes back to a class I had with Dr. Johnson 2 years ago when I was a sophomore. It really got me thinking of how am I supposed to think about these large kind of worldly issues from the perspective of my faith and being a Christian? And I always was interested in child and family welfare. Growing up in rural Indiana, a lot of my friends and their families were supported by food stamps or SNAP benefits. And so it was always kind of a world that I was aware of. And so decided to add a social work minor to my degree to be involved and to gain the educational perspective of the field of social work, to kind of get the quote unquote insider perspective into that world and into that work. So yeah, that's kind of led me to where I am now.
Yeah, your bio says that you want to pursue justice in social policy, especially in child and family welfare. What does that kind of justice look like to you, especially having grown up being able to see it? So many of us don't, and don't get that perspective.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll graduate from Wheaton in May with my bachelor's degree, and I'm looking to graduate school, specifically focusing on public policy. So I would love to use that educational experience to understand the world and work of policy in a more narrowed view, to then hopefully go on and utilize means such as research, writing, advocacy work to formalize the work of public policy in the world. So I kind of explained it as government adjacent. So you could be working in a specific think tank or a nonprofit kind of in its own view, in its own lane, per se, and working in research to advance policy advocacy within that specific field.
Professor Johnson, let's talk about the project. We understand. I can understand why the SNAP program was selected because of Addison's experience. But how do you even conceptualize a project, a study of that?
Yeah, well, it was the way we ended up as partners is that Addison approached me. We had taken a class together in Christian ethics that she referenced, and a lot of the themes that we talked about in class ended up in, through her eyes, given her interests, she saw points of connection that I wouldn't have known about otherwise. And so she was really the one who invited me into the topic, or at least into the connections that I would not have been aware of, particularly the idea of responsibility. That as a Christian, we had read Dietrich Bonhoeffer's Ethics together, and his ethics is built around the concept of responsibility, that you have commitments to the concrete people around you. And so as Addison was talking about her own story, she realized in her own community that there are needs that exist that often are behind the scenes or maybe not up and up in the center of your view unless you're paying attention. Well, a Christian who is faithful, who is thinking ethically, at least in Bonhoeffer's view, should have a concrete view of the people around them and be responsible for them, take responsibility, and then act in ways that serve. And so when she introduced the idea of applying for this prize and also this research study, I was really interested because it looked like a real world contemporary application of some of the concepts that we had developed in class.
Indeed. And for I should point out for people who may be listening that don't realize this, that the SNAP program is what, for those of us who are old enough, would remember as food stamps once upon a time. People don't get that reference anymore, but I'm old, so I guess so. Addison, let me ask you, because obviously this was your idea. Talk to me a little bit about what the SNAP program does. I mean, it supports more than 41 million Americans each month, but what it does and how it works, or maybe how in some ways you can see that it doesn't work.
Yeah, totally. So I guess I'll just kind of begin with a family applies and goes through the process and then receives their benefits. It's an incredibly lengthy application process. It's over a dozen pages of government paperwork. And if you've ever filled out government paperwork, nobody likes to do it. For some individuals, they lack the time or the resource or the understanding of what are all of these documents? How do I fill them out? And so to begin, there's actually a really big gap of individuals who probably should be receiving these benefits, but aren't, either because of, mainly because of a lack of the application. But if a family or an individual goes through the application and is accepted, then they receive benefits based off of their family's size. So it could range anywhere. I think for a one person, it's about $200, $250 a month. And then it can go up from there, dependent on how many people you have living in your household. After that, benefits are now given. They were originally with stamps back in the much before my day, but are now transferred using EBT or electronic benefit transfer, which is essentially like a debit card, but is specifically only for SNAP benefits. There's specific kind of buckets or amounts that families are given every single month for X percentage of your benefits is towards this category X of food, and then X percentage is towards this XYZ. So it's not just like, hey, we are giving you $300. You can do whatever you want for it. There are some guardrails there. Ways in which I've seen this program not work as efficiently or effectively as possible, and I talk about this in towards the end of the report, is the way that poverty is identified here is incredibly outdated and doesn't work very well in actually calculating the benefits that families need. There's things like cost of living, housing, and food based on where you're living in the country that vary person to person, place to place. Specifically, I was researching Chicago, which obviously has a much, much higher cost of living than back home where I'm from in Indiana. And while there is cost of living adjustments made, it's minimal, not sufficient. And ultimately, there just needs to be a revision and an updating to the way that poverty is calculated here in America to then provide better benefits to families.
And to either of you, is the stigma of needing such aid still a factor in people reaching out for the help? Or, you know, maybe getting the help, getting the kind of sympathy or attention that they need from people in government.
I would definitely say that it is. Through a conversation that I had with my social work professor here at Wheaton, she actually is a practicing social worker. She worked in Cook County. She's now out here in DuPage. But a lot of her job is helping people go through the process of applying to SNAP programs. Specifically, the individuals she works with are teen moms who are single. So these are anybody between, the youngest she has is 15, the oldest she has is 23. So in my age range. And a lot of what she does is helping them go through the process of, hey, here are the benefits that you're actually eligible for. A lot of times people just don't know And she said a lot of times her clients, the moms, actually think, oh, there's people probably in much worse positions than me. I don't need these. It's okay. And a lot of her job is actually making them realize, no, these are designed for you. And how can I help you do the things that you need to do to receive these benefits? So a lot of her job is actually helping people fill out the very tedious government paperwork.
I can imagine. Professor Johnson, we should make the distinction because I think we generally, or at least we reporters, and that's one of our problems, is just think of this as we're talking about hunger. Food insecurity and hunger aren't the same thing. Can you help us make that distinction?
Sure. Someone can be food insecure for lots of reasons. So food insecurity is a broader category that accounts for a lot more of the concrete realities that you'll actually see. So when we think of someone who's hungry, well, they don't have a meal right now. But food insecurity involves lack of access to food. They may not have a grocery store in their neighborhood that they can access easily. It may be access to the right kind of food. So you could be insecure in the sense that you have access to some stores, but they don't have the kind of products that could lead to a healthy diet, to a healthy life. And it can also mean you have the ability to obtain food, but it's you're not aware of all the resources, or there's unique challenges, or it's just a larger part of your budget than it really should be. So it accounts for a lot of the tensions and realities that families in particular face when it comes to securing food. And it's a wider category that helps us understand, or at least begin to think about the realities on the ground a little more concretely than the idea of being hungry did.
How well does it appear that the current structure of the SNAP program addresses those kinds of needs, the kind of varied needs that could be presented?
I think one of the things that Addison discovered again and again, and as a theologian, I found this really interesting, and as an ethicist, is that there are a lot of gaps, and the gaps are, in some sense, due to a lack of specificity and attention. When you have a program, a governmental program, and you have a bureaucracy built around it, those are necessary things, but they almost always generalize. They think in terms of huge amounts of funding. They think in terms of policies that apply in every situation. And reality is always more complex. And so you need advocates in the trenches of the bureaucracy to help this general program apply to specific situations. And that's been a point of disconnect. The programs are having a hard time actually addressing some of the concrete needs on the ground as they're lived, partly because it's designed for a large kind of general idea of hunger or of supplying resources, but not the actual lived dynamics that are constantly changing on the ground.
And I want to talk a little bit more about how things are run, but let's first remind our listeners that you're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore, and we're talking about maybe rethinking government help for those in need. We're talking with participants in the Center for Public Justice's Hatfield Prize Program. Wheaton College junior Addison Rehm and Professor Keith Johnson have looked into the so-called SNAP program dealing with food insecurity across the U.S. And that is a program that comes, sometimes we forget this, under the omnibus farm bill. And that means it's a product of Congress. And therein lies some of the problems. Am I correct, Addison? Congress tinkers with things and then they design these programs. What are the problems that you found within that structure?
I will start by saying I am by no means well versed in political science. I studied theology, and so I'll try to stay in my lane to the best that I can. However, I think through my research and talking with actual participants in SNAP or people who work in nonprofits related to food insecurity, the thing that every single person said, independent of each other, was there's just a complete and total disconnect between individuals who are sitting in the seats or the positions of power to make these decisions and the actual actual realities of the people who benefit from these decisions. There's multiple factors that can go into this. One of the big ones is re-election. Everybody wants to be re-elected, and re-election also means you need to go with the people who will vote for you. And that can be a huge factor in the way that people will swing in these matters. I think it's incredibly interesting that, I mean, this is presently happening. The Farm Bill is being revised. It was extended. The 2018 Farm Bill was extended to be active until the end of the month, which is quickly approaching. And so this is an active issue that's unraveling as we speak.
And that's a good point. In fact, as I was reading your report, I was thinking, you know, this isn't a report. You're actually doing reporting like hard news reporting. You're doing my job, and it's a good thing because we might not have looked at this. So I'm glad we are. But you also point out, and both of you can talk on this. Sometimes the program decisions that are being made with political motivations that. You know, there's a goal in mind, people's own impressions of what ought to happen. For example, we're spending too much money on this program, which may or may not be the case. How do you see that? And as in fact, especially from your perspective of what you feel should be done and what people should be doing for each other. And Professor?
Yeah. On one level, that dynamic you're describing of politicians and government leaders sometimes making decisions on the basis of criteria that are other than what's on the ground. So they're thinking in terms of funding across government. They have political interests. They have donors who are influencing in some way some of their decision making. They have a party that they're aligned with. All of these things affect the choices someone might make when it comes to a bill like the Farm Bill, and that downstream affects people on the ground. That's kind of the nature of politics. I mean, that's the way things work, at least right now. And I'm not sure that most people, and we're thinking, you know, we wrote this with the idea of addressing both a Christian and non-Christian audience, but people who care about engaging real lives and feel a calling toward that. What can we do? I think it argues for advocacy. So the system, I think that's a bigger question, and it's going to do what it's going to do, and sometimes often disappoint us. And yet we have to be in the trenches of trying to be the point of connection between that big level government program and the actual lives on the ground through our advocacy, through our education, through communication. And I think Addison's a good model for that with this project, trying to help people see the disconnect and advocating for people who often are voiceless. That's something you can do on a daily basis. The Center for Public Justice does that kind of work. We are trying to do that kind of work in this project, to be that change agent from in between.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Addison, did the advocacy developed from not necessarily this project, but from your connection, or did you get into it as an advocate?
I would definitely say it developed kind of the whole way I ended up in this position and with this opportunity was I studied theology, but was feeling this pull towards being interested and involved in public policy. And I had no clue what to do. I had no practical experience and literally through a Google search found the Hatfield Prize and saw this as kind of my way of like, all right, this is a way that I can kind of figure out, like, is this something I'm interested in? Is this something that I want to be involved in? And so, yeah, I would definitely say it was a process that was while I was in the project. So, yeah.
And you touched on it before in my last question to you, but what concerns you about what's happening with the Farm Bill now? Because I know you report on some of what's going on right now, and a worry about it.
Yeah, I think there's two main things that come to mind. It's incredibly troublesome, especially when you think food is kind of the primary foundation of the flourishing of a family. That and housing, a roof over people's heads. But I would say the first is just literal dollars. as we all know, groceries cost way more than they used to, even a year ago, even 6 months ago. And this would be the largest cut to SNAP funding in about 30 years, which is incredibly concerning, just the sheer amount of money that would be lost to the program. I think the second is a misunderstanding or a misrepresentation of individuals on SNAP, but also the program itself. I think there's kind of this stigma. We were talking about stigma earlier, that individuals on SNAP, they're either lazy, they don't know how to gain access to nutritious foods by themselves, and they make poor choices when it comes to the food that they have. There was a quote that I included that sugary drinks are actually the second most bought item with SNAP benefits, which, while that is true, it's a little bit misleading because of the price of those drinks. But to equate that then to the health status of Americans as a whole just isn't really an equal comparison to make. So I think, again, to reiterate the two things, the sheer cut in funding that there would be, but also a misunderstanding of the lives, the actual families who benefit from SNAP and the program itself are probably the two most concerning factors to me.
Now, talk to me about the things that could make the SNAP program. If you had a magic wand or, control of Congress, what could make the program or the way we address food insecurity, to put a wider spin on it, better?
I think, to go back to what I was saying before, just reassessing the way that poverty is evaluated here in the United States would change SNAP funding. That level would most likely rise, which would then rise the levels of benefits that families were able to receive. That would just better reflect the realities of families, that their actual needs and the needs of their children today. So that would be the thing that I think I would advocate most for. And that is not only my personal opinion throughout this process, but was also the thing that was brought reiterated to me through individuals actually in this today, through people at GCFD, the Greater Chicago Food Depository, and Chicago DCFS. Both groups kind of in this work were that was the thing they advocated for.
And Keith Johnson, you have some ideas on what you'd like to see more of or less of?
Well, I think tend to think at a more theoretical level. And so what I appreciate about what Addison did is that she and her project went and talked to both recipients, to those who are working directly with those who need SNAP funding, who are able, helping them apply for the programs. And she was able to get a on the ground realistic picture of what's actually happening. And so what I would really like to see at a broad level is a change in the way we think about things like the SNAP program and like the Farm Bill, that we somehow and in creative ways work towards, as we are implementing a bill and implementing and crafting it over a long time and in the processes of Congress, that we are actually able to connect on the ground with who is affected by what we're doing and have that speak into the process more directly. So to me, that speaks for the need of politically engaged citizens who are knowledgeable, who are seeking out of their commitments, seeking out reality, and then communicating that back. Beyond a policy level, I would like to see individual change. I think as Americans, we have an obligation to be hardworking citizens who are committed to one another and to this project. And so we, this project we call America. And so we have to be engaged on in beyond our own individual lives and get out and start to advocate and draw some of these connections ourselves.
I hear you on that. It's especially in these political seasons that we get, especially every 4 years. Some politicians say, well, who've been asked about this, and we've heard this quote this, this year. What happens with all of these people that need help? And they say, well, some social service agencies and the churches are going to just have to do more. To which, the churches and social services agencies look around at how their donations have been lagging and go, "You're kidding, right?" But that's the reality, is that we're expecting the agencies that are trying to help to just help more. And that's got to, you know, that's got to weigh on people. I mean, how much can, you know, even the faith community do? I mean, is it frustrating?
There's a frustrating bifurcation there of as if the government is not for and about the lives of the people, that we do our thing, but you on the ground, you all will take care of that, as if there's a difference in mission there. We are at a governmental level and the level of policy and the level of our bureaucracies and our programs. We are a part of a same network, a community. And yes, there are social service agencies and churches who need to be engaged and always want to do more, but our government has a responsibility also because it is us.
Addison Rehm, how has this project, if at all, changed your view of what you want to do in the future?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as a senior, that's kind of the question that I think about this entire year is, what's next? What am I going to do? And I think this project and this process has really solidified the things that I know and the things that I don't know, which the things that I don't know are most definitely greater. So I think it has solidified my decision to want to pursue graduate studies. So I'm currently in the process of applying to a master's of public policy. But it's also solidified my interest in integrating both my faith with the work of policy. And so seeking out any opportunities in any ways, whether that be in academia, but also just in my involvement politically in my church, to live out the mission and the vision that I believe my faith calls me to. So we'll see what happens.
No, I think we're going to see a lot of good things. I would like to thank Addison Rehm and Professor Keith Johnson from Wheaton College and the Center for Public Justice for spending this half hour with us. To our listeners, if you would like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That's WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on the homepage, and you can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Dellamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.